As Hamas maintains its control of Gaza and fires rockets across Israel's southern border, we must stand with Israel. And as ISIS and civil war in Syria destabilize the region, displacing millions and threatening shared security interests, we must support all those affected by ongoing violence and terror, and we must stand with Israel. Our defense relationship is critical to both nations, which is why I support the United States' commitment to provide Israel with $38 billion in military assistance over the next decade.
Hello, and welcome to State of the Revolution, the Michigan Progressive Podcast. My name is Benjamin Klon. Today we have Zachary Reinhart.
Hey, everyone.
We have Melina Brand.
Hello.
We have Ross the Boss Fisher.
Hey.
And we've got Ali Gonzalez.
Hello.
How you guys doing?
Fantastic. Great.
So the first thing that I think we're going to talk about today is the UTLA strike, the United Teachers of Los Angeles. They just had a 7-day strike demanding better conditions for their schools. And yeah, after 7 days, they finally signed a contract, which got them a lot of the things that they asked for, mm-hmm. not everything. They got a pay raise of, I think, 6%. They got a commitment to smaller class sizes by 2021. Right now, Los Angeles has like some of the highest class sizes of the
whole country. Yeah, it's like 45, 50.
Yeah, it's like, it's ridiculous. And they've got a commitment to add more nurses and full-time librarians at their schools.
And social workers.
Don't forget those nurseries as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's pretty great that they've gotten what they've gotten so far. What do you guys think about it?
Direct action gets the goods, you know?
That's right.
you gotta fight for what you want. And, I think they did something interesting that hasn't been done. And I think it's kind of like more so the focus of newer teacher strikes is, they're making them more intersectional. It's not just about like, the teachers, it's about the students, and it's about like wraparound services, and it's about like bringing in things that are like, you know, multiple constituencies can get behind, so these strikes become bigger and more powerful.
Yeah,
I think I read how like the teachers or the parents and the families got more involved because the teachers explained that they're not just like going for their salaries, they're caring about these students in the community, and so that way they got everybody involved and it worked a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think a lot of times there's a disconnect between sometimes what the parents are, you know, want, and well, there isn't really a disconnect. I think what parents and teachers want often aligns, but a lot of times the parents aren't convinced that the teachers want
the same
things that they do. Yeah, they just want it for, you know, their own salaries and stuff like that, as opposed to like actually improving the kids' lives, which is not true. But I think this seems like they're able to align the interests.
That right wing messaging kind of you know, at its core, it's kind of like it goes back to the Saving Superman like documentary they made back in like 2013, which kind of like emphasized that point that like teachers are just greedy and they're, you know, wanting everything, which is, you know, couldn't be further from the truth.
Right.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, you know, going off of what Zach said about direct action, I think one of the reasons why they were able to be so successful is because they had a lot of grassroots support from like all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
Like the union organizers, I think they flew in teachers from across the country who had participated in strikes like over like the last few years. They had, you know, teachers flying in to help participate and be on the picket line with them. And like they had this GoFundMe, I think it was a GoFundMe. It was like tacos for teachers to pay for like food trucks to help pay the teachers who were help pay for the food of the teachers that were striking. And their goal was to raise like 15 grand. And over the course of like 19 days, they raised like $49,000.
I know one of the things that I heard about that they're also fighting for is like they have like it's so obviously like LA schools, a lot of the kids there that, you know, go there are people of color, and they were having police officers come in and like search these kids, and it was like obviously very targeted, and I mean, you just had a story come out, I think I can't remember where it was, I want to say it was Alabama, but they had like four young African-American girls that were strip search, actually. They had them like take off their shirt and whatnot, ACLU's getting involved, but mm-hmm. just crazy. I mean, the fact that, like, these schools are being, like, they're treating them like prisons more than they are schools.
And inner city schools, you see that in most inner city schools. Like, if you go to, like, an affluent suburb, like, Royal Oak or Williamston or somewhere like that, you're not going to see that. You're not going to see metal detectors in the school. But you're also not going to see, when you're driving through the city, a ton of shut down schools like mm-hmm. you do in Flint, like you do in Detroit, like you do in Lansing. But it's just, it just goes to show you, like, those schools are just, the students are criminalized. Mm-hmm. It's in the inner city because it is a majority or close to a majority of children of color.
Mm-hmm.
We're just criminalized based on our skin.
Mm-hmm.
You see that in any inner city school.
Yeah, and I think that really speaks to the fact that, you know, the what the teachers did, like, over with their strike, you know, it was amazing, and they won some great things, but things are not going to improve like the way that they should until there's real improvement of economic conditions overall for the communities in which those schools exist.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that, and that's something that I think that burden a lot of times gets placed on the education system to remediate all these problems that are in inner cities, that, like, yeah. teachers are just going to be, like, miracle workers and solve all these kids' problems that they have mm-hmm. before they even enter the school. And so that's not to say that, you know, education doesn't play a huge role, but I do agree that, like, there's a lot. I think the economic component has to be talked about too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we can't, like, then that goes back to, like, children who are going to school and that's the only meal that they're getting in a day. It's kind of that same thing. Like, we can't just expect for teachers to be the miracle workers and for their schools to be, they should be safe spaces and they should be places where children are getting fed, they're getting taken care of, girls can get tampons when they go to school and they don't have to worry about it, things like that. But what does that do once those kids graduate high school? And also, why are we putting the burden of that on teachers who are getting paid, what, $35,000 a year?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How is that there?
Yeah. We're asking them to be miracle workers and giving them no money to do
yeah.
it.
Yeah. It's going to be a miracle that they make it through the year, basically. Yeah.
The best teachers, and you can have a district filled with the best teachers in the world, but they can't do shit if you're not fucking giving them money.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the resources to you know, adequately take care of their students.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and especially when it's one teacher to 35 kids. Like, how are they supposed to pay enough attention to any one of those kids to get the proper support?
And, like, Ben and I went to a school where kids were just crammed into a class. Like, I can't remember how many kids I had my junior year in my econ class where I was sitting on the floor for a week, the first week of econ, and we're sharing books, and the books are tattered, and they got penises in them. Like, that's not an education that you're supposed to be getting. Then what happens? Kids just stop showing up for class.
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
point blank. And I think that, I mean, maybe that was why people don't see class size as a big, you know, problem. Like, kids will eventually stop showing up.
Mm-hmm.
And they do. They stop showing up.
It's kind of a part, I think it's part of, like, a systemic plot too. It's they don't want to invest in the schools because if they can allow them to fail, they can pin the failures on the public education system and then go in and privatize these schools.
Prisons.
You look at New Orleans, for instance, right after they had the hurricane, they made, like, a huge, like, push towards, they had a huge election where they took over the school board and got these, like, people that were very in favor of charters. And in New Orleans now, there's not actually one public school. They're all charter schools in New Orleans.
Which is so scary.
Yeah, I mean, and that's, like, I think that's the goal, is to make these schools a failure.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the Republican strategy, right, for everything.
Mm-hmm.
Let us cut as many government services as we can. Let's fuck everything up as much as we can. And we'll point at it and say, see, government doesn't work. This is why we need to privatize everything.
Mm-hmm. And then they're going to keep slashing accessibility to those groups that they don't want in.
And that was one component that wasn't as successful, if I remember correctly, from the LA teacher strike, was they wanted more accountability for charter schools. Mm-hmm. I don't think that was one of the areas they didn't.
I think they wanted to put a cap on the growth of charter schools in the area, but they didn't get it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think their school district board said that they might ask the state, like, they're going to vote on whether or not to ask the state if they would stop if they would put a cap on charter schools, but obviously it's not going to fucking go anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I know the school board election, the amount of money that was spent on the LA school board election, which is astronomical. I mean, it was record breaking. I mean, it's more than some states spend for like Senate campaigns. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just insane. Millions of dollars.
Yeah.
So there's definitely invested interest in this.
Yeah. And
it's not in behalf of students and teachers and communities.
Yeah.
It's mind boggling. It makes no sense how conditions of schools can be so terrible and so awful in like one of the wealthiest, like the wealthiest state in the country, in a city. What is it? Like I think they have like the second largest economy of like any city in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like it's a rich place. They have a ton of money. So why can't they fund their schools better? Why can't they provide more services?
I don't think it's like a will, it's a priority thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And unfortunately in this country, people of color are always put at the bottom of the priority list.
Yeah.
Absolutely true. So speaking of the charter school takeover in New Orleans, Mr. Cory Booker made a trip there recently and gave a speech at a charter school. He's thinking about running 2020?
Yeah, I think I seen a Twitter thing said something about announcing soon between you and me to respond to someone. So he's definitely going to run. And I mean, that's a quick way to make your campaign dead on arrival on a Democratic primary where you have teacher strikes going on
right.
In red states, blue states, like it, everywhere. I mean, yeesh, bad optics.
And I was interested in the group that he was there on behalf of is called Democrats for Education Reform, which is like a pro-charter group of Democrats that advocates for standardized testing, increasing charter schools, and increasing teacher evaluations. Mm-hmm. And so the fact that he's been involved with this organization for a while, he's actually on one of the boards for the organization. So he is one of those Democrats who essentially agrees with a lot of what Betsy DeVos and charter advocates believe in, and is not really that big of a fan of public education. So, I mean, it's about as bad as you can get in terms of education as a Democrat, I would think.
Yeah, he praised Betsy DeVos at a speech once, too.
Oh,
so, I mean, it's just like, yeesh.
That's, like, hard to do, I feel like. I feel like you can't be a Democrat and be like, you know, Betsy DeVos, she's the sharp one. That doesn't make any sense.
No.
Yeah.
There's just a disconnect. I feel like there's a disconnect that we're going to find with any candidate who's announced to run for the presidency on the Democratic platform, and any of them, like Kamala Harris, Elizabeth Warren. If Bernie runs, I could point out things I feel like Bernie is disconnected with, but that is a stark one.
Yeah, I mean,
that is glaring. If you don't have a good education platform, do you really have, that's like the big thing that people talk about. Like, we're going to go in and we're going to strengthen education. And it just, that's not what we're going to get with his thoughts on education. We're just not going to.
No.
That's, education is always one of like the top issues Democrats run on. So if you can't deliver on that at a minimum, I don't know what else he's going to come up with.
And just watch him do like a 180 on it. And like, you know, he'll make it a part of his platform. They'll say that he wants to help strengthen public education, even though we know what he's doing. Like the way that I'm pretty sure he endorsed Sanders' Medicare for All bill in the Senate. Mm-hmm. Like, but he's taken so much money from Big Pharma.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, we know you're a liar, dude.
It's messy. He's messy. Is that who we want in the White House? Is charisma enough?
He's that charismatic.
Now he's charismatic.
Yeah.
And there's intrigue because he's single. I know I read an article recently. People are like, who's Cory Booker fucking? Is it, you know?
Oh, wow.
Is it, what's her name?
Rosario Dawson. Which is so weird.
Oh.
It's so weird because, like, she was a surrogate for Bernie in 2016.
Yeah. And I also thought that was weird. It sounds kind of like she's been bought over.
Uh-huh.
I'd be like, he's dating, I don't know. That's just, the whole thing is just really weird. But I think that that's going to be a big sell for him, because then there is that intrigue where it's like, ooh, anyone could be the first lady. I really do. Because most people
who win... Don't think you're wrong.
Most people who win are married, and I think that he's kind of flipping that on his head, that look at we're growing up in a society where you don't have to be married by a specific age for you to have any sort of worth. And where that's something that you see more in, like, feminist circles where women are like, my worth isn't based on whether or not a man wants to keep me in this house for the rest of my life raising children, where now it's like, he is young, he's charismatic, and he's black. I think that he thinks that's enough to win a presidential campaign. Mm-hmm. I really do.
I mean, you look at Barack Obama's, like, he was young, charismatic, also black, but, you know, he didn't do anything. It was just, like, empty promises. And I feel like that would just be a repeat if Booker was in office.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, putting Booker and Obama in the same field with charisma, I don't know if that's, like, Booker might be charismatic, but he's no Obama. Like, Obama can, like, sell drone strikes to me. Like, he can, like, he is quite in order, and he has a way of, like, making some things just sound... No, better
palatable. Than
palatable, yes.
It's the gray hair.
Yeah.
We just need Cory Booker to go gray a little early. The silver fox is what's selling it.
I even remember, like, the first time I even heard of Cory Booker was on The Mindy Show, which is like a comedy on Hulu. Like, that was the first time I saw him. I was like, oh, what a cool guy. Like, he's on a comedy.
I mean, I saw him on Parks and Rec. That was like, I think that was the first time I watched.
Has he been on every show?
He knew what he was doing.
It was so silly, too. It was so weird. Like, he did this bit where he's, like, talking to Leslie Knope. Like, and he's got Orrin Hatch next to him.
Oh, God.
Like, and, like, they're like, you know what we're really into? Polynesian folk music. And, like, they have, like, this band that's called Across the Isle.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like that may have honestly also been the first time that I had heard about him.
First time I heard about him, it was back when he was the mayor of New York. And he saved a woman from a fire. He saved... Yes.
What?
Yeah. Like, he's like... Yeah, I was like, what in the world? I think this is back in, like, 2014, 2013, around then. But yeah, he saved a woman from a fire. Like, her house is on fire.
His bare hands?
He ran in, like,
wait,
grabbed the woman.
When was this?
This is, like, 2013 or 2014.
Wow, okay. Yeah, attractive meter just went up.
Yeah, now I have to vote for him.
Yeah, no, I bet when his comms director found it out, they came in their fucking pants.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that ad is going to be just Cory Booker just, like, coming out of a flaming building. I'll say this, you know, like, it's, like, basically the woman's, like, America. Yeah. And, like, the burning building's the country. Like,
he also saves, like, a kitten and an American flag from the wreckage at the same time. Oh, yeah, that's going to be scary, though, because, yeah, it's like you said with, like, Obama, he could sell us a drone strike, and he did for a very long time, where we were ignoring his immigration record and how many detainees that we had and how many people were getting
deported.
I was gonna say deployed. Yeah, they were getting deported. We completely ignored it because he was hilarious and he did a lot of other surface good things. But there was no sustenance that we thought. I mean, like, even from, like, Guantanamo Bay, we didn't see that even. There was no public option. Yeah,
and it's just like continuity, you know, on the inside and, like, change on the outside kind of thing. It was, like, more or less, like, kind of the same old, same old.
Yeah, the only difference was that we saw, like, gay marriage was a really big thing.
Yeah, yeah.
That was, like, and so he had that track record, and then, you know, killing Osama bin Laden, which is, like, a whole other thing, but he was able to win over Democrats, which he obviously didn't need to do in that second re-election, or in that re-election, but also Republicans. Mm-hmm. Like, there were a lot of veterans who were like, yeah, we fucking got him. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, no one else could have said that. He won easily because he's charismatic enough to woo everyone.
Right.
On both sides.
Right. Which is why you have people that can carry, I think you have candidates that can carry the neoliberal mantle, and their personalities are likable enough to, like, kind of carry that through, and then you have other candidates just don't, like, you know, like a Hillary Clinton, for instance, who, like, carries, you know, a very centrist policy, but just has, like, very little in personal appeal to a wide audience.
Yeah.
I mean,
somehow people still like her. But
I don't. Yeah, I mean, I got a new car recently. But the one that I had just recently, like I had gotten it last year, but I still put a Bernie 2016 sticker on it, and I drive around town and I see people with like Clinton Kane stickers. I'm like, that's gross.
Yeah.
You be ashamed of yourself. I don't know why you still have that on your car.
Yeah. There was one, a Hillary yard sign that was here in Lansing. It was up on, like, the east side. I forget which street it was, but for, like, way out. Like, it was probably up, like, last year. And I was like, we need to get rid of, like, please. And Adam was the person who's like, I'm good. I'm a good person. I voted for Hillary. I did vote for Trump.
Yeah, this wasn't my fault.
Just take that shit down. Yeah.
Well, you know, maybe third time's a charm.
Please. God. Please, no.
It's not even funny to joke at. Somewhere Hillary Clinton is tingling everywhere. Like, someone somewhere wants it.
I think it would be hilarious if she ran again in 2020. Just watch her get, like, 1% in Iowa. I think that would be a fucking amazing.
She won't. She'll be what everyone thinks Nader was, and she will siphon the white female vote and the white gay vote. I really believe that she would do that if she won, and she would take away, you know, like, votes from promising candidates. Yeah, just in the primary alone.
Speaking of, like, neoliberal kind of stuff, I was reading up on, like, Booker's speech when he talked to the charter schools, and he was talking about how his dad, like, you know, he was impoverished and he became one of the top of, like, IBM's salespeople. And I was like, wow, that's eerily reminiscent of, like, pulling yourself up by your own bootstraps.
Right.
Is that the kind of person that I want as president? I don't think so.
Right. Yeah. What other things is he going to pitch to us that you guys can figure this out on your own?
Yeah.
If my dad could do it, then you guys can do it. Like, jokes on you. Fuck,
I don't know if I'm comfortable with that.
Yeah, those colloquialisms that kind of, like, have this idea that we can all just, like, pull ourselves up, or, like, you know, if you just try hard, you know, like, you'll make it. Like, I think Julian Castro had, like, you know, thinking is currency of the mind.
The mind currency.
Yeah, if you just, like, just, like, get everyone smart, they'll have mind currency, and, like, they'll somehow be better. Like, I mean, it's just, like, another thing. It's, like, I think it reinstates this, like, idea that, like, of elitism, like, somehow, like, if you're not smart, if you, like, didn't excel in school, like, somehow, like, you don't deserve success. You don't deserve, like, we don't need that. Like, we have to step away from that mentality.
Well, absolutely, because I think that in a just society, you should be able to live a decent life, even if you're a stupid motherfucker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just the
campaign slogan right there.
It's true. Just the fact that you are a human is enough. Like, anyone's humanity is enough. And I think that there aren't any candidates who are really going to say that, because then they have to say that includes ex-felons, that includes prisoners, that includes, like, the disabled. But I feel like it's kind of that slippery slope. Like, who should have rights to, like, an equal education? You know, like, we should get the same education that kids at Cranbrook Kings would get, you know, and that's just the truth. But no one's going to say that. No candidate is really, and I mean, and correct me if I'm wrong, do any of the candidates running, besides probably Andrew Yang with a very strong prison reform, obviously not Kamala Harris, but anyone else with a strong prison reform platform?
Does Andrew Yang have a strong prison reform
platform?
Andrew
Yang has strong everything.
I have not looked into this person, but apparently I need to. Damn.
I like a lot of what I've heard so far. Like,
I like
UBI.
Him.
I like him, too. I don't know if he's a viable candidate.
I don't think he is, but I do like him.
Yeah.
Well, I think with the way that they're going to do the debate, so letting people that aren't necessarily, in the past it's always like you had to meet these certain requirements and the requirements are kind of high, and they've lowered them substantially to try to let more people in. So it'd be really great. I mean, even if he's on the debate stage, I think he expands the, you know, talk, like the conversation, like what we're talking about, like, yeah, like prison reform. Like, we desperately need conversations on prison reform.
Yeah.
And not just like, we need like more specifics than criminal justice reform as like some blanket statement that covers everything. Mm-hmm. Like, we need specifics.
Yeah. Like, what are we doing when these people are leaving penitentiaries? Like, are they finding work so that they can still maintain like a comfortable living situation? Mm-hmm. And they're not. Right. I mean, they're just not.
Because the system is designed for recidivism. Yeah.
And we're drinking. It all goes back to like education, though. You know, like we were saying, like you want these kids to fail, you know, because then they are being fed this entire time. You know, if you don't go to university or if you don't get a good job right out of high school, then you know you're not going to be able to make it. And these kids are thinking, how can I make it? Mm. And that's immediately they're going to turn to crime, and that's not, you know, that's just the truth. Kids are always going to turn to crime to make ends meet.
Yeah, if there's not opportunity given elsewhere, I mean, where else can you turn?
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly. And, you know, then they get fed straight in. It's that school-to-prison pipeline. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, then you get the mark on your record, and you get out, and there's no getting a job. So what do? You go back to what you know and what
there's
you
no
can do.
There's no getting a job. Exactly. There's no assistance with housing.
Yeah,
anything.
And as a black man, like, you would expect for Cory Booker to be the champion of changing that, and he's not going to be.
No, I mean, it was just a couple years ago, they just finally, and it was only because of a lot of public pressure, stopped taking private prison money.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
well, didn't he swear off like PAC money in general?
Yes. Well, yeah, it came in phases. So like mm-hmm. it was like there was like the prison private prison money was first, and then it was like he got in trouble with the pharma bill. Like, they wanted to import drugs from Canada like for cheaper, and he voted no. And like, people just went ape shit crazy on him. Like,
quintessential like centrist incrementalism.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah. And so like, and then like they're like, well, obviously it's because you're taking PAC money. He's like, all right, I'm gonna stop taking pharmaceutical money. And people are like, oh, okay. Well, you just take all the other corporate PAC money. And then he finally said, I'll stop taking all corporate PAC money. I mean, it kind of come in phases, incrementalism.
He just makes me so angry because, like, he has a perfect platform for, like, this is someone who looks like me. He should be, like, doing all that he can to mm-hmm. make this better, and he's not. He's failing us.
Well, pull yourself up by your bootstraps.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Just like his dad.
Just like his dad. Yeah.
If only I could work for IBM nowadays.
Right. Shit. How do I get that? Me. My dad.
So in a bit of actually local news, the New York Times just reported a few days ago that apparently Joe Biden made a stop here in actually Benton Harbor, Michigan, just 3 weeks before the midterm elections in November of last year. And he gave a speech to the Economic Club of, I think it was like called the Economic Club of Southwestern Michigan or some shit like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, he gave a speech for $200,000 in which he praised Fred Upton, the congressman from which district is
it? The C6.
The 6th district, yeah. Yeah.
He's going against Matt Long John.
Yeah.
It was a close race, too.
It was a close race.
4.5 points.
In which Fred Upton won.
Thank you, Joe.
Yeah.
Thanks, Joe. We really appreciate that.
Yeah, can we... Joe Biden is one of my least favorite candidates for 2020. Mm-hmm. And I just cannot stand this, like, affection that people have for him as like this nice uncle, like old man guy.
It's the memes, man.
Old
like,
man guy.
Yeah. like, his record is horrible.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And but just forget about that because he's a lovable guy who likes ice cream and stuff. So let's just elect him as the next president.
He's too lovable, though. He's like a creepy.
Yeah, he's also creepy. Yeah.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I'm
and we forgot about that already, too. I mean, that was completely brushed from the public's mind when that stuff started coming out. Like, Joe Biden kind of creepy with girls, and everyone's like, yeah, but it's just kind of like creepy, like your creepy uncle. Like, he was
like,
with Obama.
Okay,
yeah, like that romance, though.
Yeah, the romance. Yeah, it's that same bullshit that's keeping George W. Bush like this affable goof and not the person who, like, holds hands with the fucking people. Like, what the hell?
One more piece of candy, we'll forget.
Yeah, one more piece of candy, seriously. I was like,
what's it with, like, mass murders and paintings? Like, you know, Hitler, like, had, like, a love for paintings?
Yeah.
That's a good point.
It's true. Yeah. And they're all fucking awful.
Because they have to be creative to do all the things they do.
Yeah.
The artistic side.
I think Hitler was a better artist than Bush, though. Bush's paintings look like a
10-year-old. Yeah, as long as you keep him painting and far away from politics, like that whole family. Jeb 2. Someone ran to macrame or something. I don't know. Macrame?
But, yeah, back to Biden. I really hate him. I'm just like...
I feel like
I want to destroy him. I'm just kind of biding my time. I'm waiting for him. I'm just waiting for him to announce to hit him with like everything in his past that was just awful. Because like there's just so much, like Anita Hill, like
yes,
the whole,
that's
like,
what I was gonna
like,
say.
The segregation thing. You go back as far as that. Like he pushed like against segregation, like.
But guys, he was like super attractive when he was young and had that view. Like that's people come up like, look at these like 15 pictures of Joe Biden when he was a total zaddy, and it's like BuzzFeed, and it's like, who? What are you playing, cat?
Time out. What's a zaddy?
Anything? It's like a zaddy, you know, like above daddy, and it's like, oh, he's like kind of a daddy. It's like Obama, and then the like Joe Biden younger. It's like a zaddy.
Oh, interesting.
It's like more.
I learned something.
I feel more intelligent.
Yeah, because look at Joe Biden now. He's just a marshmallow with hair. It's just gross.
Yeah. I mean, the good news is that Joe Biden, I mean, he's run for president before, at least two times by now. I ran in 88 and he ran in 08. Again, I mean, in primaries against Obama, and he did it horribly both times, never really made it out of the gate. So he runs pretty awful presidential campaigns. Now, he's obviously his stock's gone up since he's been VP, but. I'm not as afraid of him as some of the other contenders, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, don't really, I mean, with the whole like Kavanaugh thing we just went through and his connection to Anita Hill, I don't even understand like how any Democrat can take him seriously right now. Like I just don't. Like
or any young person.
Yeah, I mean,
like all that, like all the millennials said about millennials, like, you know, they think they have it so hard, oh give me a break. He literally says, I have no empathy.
Like, I believe it.
Said, I have no empathy. Like, how do you...
He forgot we could vote. I
know, right?
We're all still nodding.
Millennials make up the biggest voting bloc in America, and you want to piss them all off ahead of a 2020 run? Are you fucking joking?
Well, he responded to this article in a condescending way. He's like, forgive me, Father, for I have sinned.
Oh, yeah, because like, he's friendly with Republicans.
Yeah. Like, and it's like, dude, being friendly with Republicans is like, well, personally, but I mean, that's like not what it's really about. It's about the fact that we were going into like one of the most important elections, like of our lifetimes. And like, and another thing, like everyone wants to say like, oh, well, it's cause you know, Fred Upton did all this work with cancer research. Fuck that. Like, this guy voted to repeal the ACA. Like, he does not care about people with cancer. Like, if he did, nobody would ever do that. Like, that would just leave hundreds of people, hundreds of thousands of people without coverage.
Mm-hmm.
No way can you say that somebody that would do that cares about healthcare.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I mean, if that was his, like, only reason for supporting him, too, like, he just put his personal reasons, like, over who he represents. Like, we are the people who he's supposed to be fighting for, and he just, like, doesn't give a fuck about that. He
Especially in Benton Harbor, where, you know, oh my gosh, how many years ago they were the first city, I'm pretty sure, in Michigan to get the emergency financial manager under Rick Snyder. And it was, you know, it was just, you could point to, was it St. Joseph or St. Joe is the next city, and it's the very, like, rich, affluent, very well-off city. And then they, like, pointed at Benton Harbor, and they were like, look at all these poor schmucks, and they are just, they're doing so horrible, and the schools are failing, and the economy there is failing, and there's crime. So, like, in a place like that, you would, that was just so strife with that, you would want to have more...
Democratic representation?
In outreach for those people. And you're not getting no outreach with Republicans.
No, Fred Upton? How?
Yeah, you're not getting that at all.
And, you know, Uncle Joe's coming in there and taking his nice $200,000 check for his speech. That maybe should he maybe he could donate that money back to like Benton Harbor, you know, and pay off all their financial problems. But instead, I don't know.
What's he even doing with that money?
Yeah, I don't.
Like,
I don't think he needs it.
Do people that rich even do with more?
Yeah, he's already collecting a shit ton from his book that he's like going around, on a publicity tour for. So apparently, he needs more with speeches. Bad speeches.
So stupid.
Not even good speeches.
I mean, like, as a personality, I like him. Like especially with the memes and everything. Like, he does have, like, a sort of, like, endearing, like, surface-level personality.
Well, I think even then, like, even in, like, the memes, like, it's kind of, like, more of, like, a... Like, I mean, there's, like, Gaff Biden, you know, he's, like, known for, like, kind of, like, being, like, a goof. And, like, even in the memes, he's, like, portrayed as, like,
kind of stupid.
Yeah, like a goof. And, yeah, I mean, I guess it makes him a little bit more endearing when you look at just the surface.
Right, but then you, like, take any look at his record at all, and he's just, it's just abhorrent.
Yeah.
he was just at a, I don't know, he was on that speaking tour maybe, but he was apologizing for the crime bill, and he was like, you know, well, we were just listening to the experts, and the experts told us that, you know, once you do crack, you just don't go back. It's just like, were the experts really telling you that, Joe?
Is that what he said?
That was the entire meeting.
Even had a citation.
I think he's like mixing two very distinct things there.
The sins that him and Hillary are gonna have to like pay for. You know, like you know, just a way of saying like Hillary had the same thing. You know, and that was what we thought was going to end her campaign. We were like, black folks aren't gonna vote for Hillary after she called our children super predators, especially considering that the children she called super predators are of like voting age now. But she still fucking won the primary.
Yeah.
So I think America will shock you.
Well, it's because, unfortunately, in this country, too many people are unable, like, they just don't have the capacity to look at politicians as anything other than personalities.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
They don't look into their record. They don't look into how they voted, their past statements. Oftentimes in a lot of elections, name recognition is enough. And I think that's part of the reason why Bernie lost by 3 million votes in 2016 is because he started out with basically no one knowing who he was. And Hillary Clinton, you know, like everyone knows who Hillary Clinton is, you know, back then.
Everyone knows who Joe Biden is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But however, I think that Sanders might have an edge this year or in 2020 if he runs again, which I guess I think he's gonna do it, but like now he's a household name, like his name recognition is like over 90% now.
I think it'll be interesting though to see if people will view Bernie as the viable candidate that like everyone thought that he was in 2016, or if people are going to kind of look at him and still have that. But maybe he's too old, but maybe he doesn't have a platform strong enough to unite both sides, which is like, what, you know, a whole thing.
I think that's stupid. Because all his entire platform, every policy he runs on, taxing the rich, breaking up the big banks, Medicare for all, getting big money out of politics, each one of these individual policies has the popular support. Like, the majority of people are in favor of them. And he is still, by every poll, the most popular politician in America. Why not nominate the most popular politician in America if you want to beat Donald Trump?
Most unpopular politician. Well, actually, the second most unpopular politician in America. The first is actually Hillary Clinton, who's still somehow more unpopular than Donald Trump. According to the last poll. Like, I don't understand, but okay.
I don't know. That sounds about right to me.
But yeah, I mean, I agree. I'm curious to see how this election turns out, because you have in the last election it was literally two candidates, so like I'm sure there were a lot of people that voted for Bernie that were like not voting for Bernie as much as they were just like voting against Hillary,
right?
Yeah.
And vice versa, people that maybe not necessarily liked Hillary but just like voting against Bernie, you know, because like this like old white man. So I'm curious, like now we'll have like 20 candidates, and like if you're, you know, no matter like who you want, like in terms of like identity representation or policy or anything like that, I think it'll actually be like given in this election.
Yeah.
Closely, at least more so than any other.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Primaries are definitely like popularity contests.
Yeah. Speaking of which, don't we have a
I mean, yeah, when we taped our episode a couple days ago, we talked about Tulsi Gabbard. But I want to focus today on Kamala, because she just announced on Monday. And I don't know, how do you guys feel? You are great. Excited?
No, I'm just kidding.
Kamala, her slogan now is for the people. That's her slogan.
It's
that she's
not her with. Awkwardly saying Wakanda forever. Jesus Christ, that was surreal.
What about for the presidents?
Yeah, for real. Yeah, I don't like her. But I think that she has the same appeal that Cory Booker does. And I, you know, all these articles I read, they must be just fucking trash. Because I'm about to say, I read in an article recently that because she is a younger, brown, like, woman, that she has the attractive factor going for her. People look at her and they're like, this is a young, attractive person, and it's not like Hillary Clinton, who was, like, older and...
There's only a few years younger than Bernie.
Yeah, you know, she has that going for her, though. She's got the young, and she...
I'm talking about Clinton, not
yeah, no, yeah. yeah. But she doesn't have the charisma that Booker does whatsoever, or that Obama does, which I think is what everyone is kind of trying to go for. They want to be as likable.
Be the next Obama.
Yep.
Well, I read an article actually talking about it. It was talking about who, like, Obama is considering endorsing, and his two options right now that are highest on his list are Joe Biden and Kamala Harris.
Yeah, I don't understand.
I think she'll do decent in the debates, just because of her prosecutor background. Like, she's, you know, interrogated people before, so I think, like, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, she didn't do an, like, of the people that, like, did the Kavanaugh, like, interrogation, basically. she was probably the best, or one of the best.
That's one thing.
I thought she was better than Cory Booker's Spartacus moment.
Yeah, no, it was definitely better. But that's one of the reasons I hear people saying why they like her so much, is because how great she is at questioning people in Senate hearings. And I'm like, yeah, that's a nice skill and everything. It's obviously good that you can interrogate people.
Hey, she should make a career out of that.
She worked for the CIA.
It's not even from the CIA. I'm an FBI agent here.
But that's another example of, like, the whole personality thing. Like, oh, she's got all these good sound bites, and oh, she's really well spoken. So, like, that, but, like, what are her, you know, real policy items? And, like, and what is her track record?
She's really well spoken. She sounds good when she talks, but, like, if you listen to her, there's nothing there. It's empty. Yeah. I want to show you this clip real quick. A reporter asked her, how she plans on reaching out to voters in 2020.
Some of your colleagues who are either thinking about doing this or exploring it are appearing at MLK events across the country. I'm just curious. Black voters didn't turn out in the kind of numbers that they did in 2016 as they did back in 2008. What does your party need to do differently in 2020 to ensure that they show up?
Well, for all voters, we've got to reach out to folks. We've got to go where they are, understand who they are. We have to listen as much as we talk. And that is certainly what I intend to do as a candidate for the President of the United States. It is my full intention to travel this country and to sit in living rooms and to listen to families and let them express their concerns and their needs, and understand that when we take on these positions, it is about representing all of the people of the country. And we must understand that based on where they are, be it geographic region, be it gender or race or ethnicity, there may be a diversity of issues and concerns, and we should be in tune to those issues and concerns. And fundamentally, we also should understand that the vast majority of us have so much more in common than what separates us. And so I say that to say what I know to be true, which is when people wake up in the middle of the night, be it a mom in Compton or a mom in Kentucky, she's waking up having the same concerns about how she's going to be able to raise those babies, how she's going to be able to pay the rent at the end of the month, how she's going to be able to retire with dignity.
It's just not enough.
Yeah, so no, those are nice words. Those are nice words and everything, but, like...
Did she answer the question?
No. Yeah, exactly. So what's your strategy? You're gonna sit in people's living rooms and talk to them?
This is textbook. Someone is asking you, do Black Lives Matter? And you're saying all lives matter instead. No, she immediately walked past him asking, how can we get the black community to get out and vote in the same numbers that they voted for Obama?
Yeah, and she like pivoted to Susan and in was, Kansas.
And she was like, Kentucky. Okay, Kentucky. First of all, is that to say that all of the women in Kentucky are white? Kamala Harris, they didn't answer the question whatsoever. How do we ignite the black community in the same with the same fervor that Obama did? She refused to answer. And yes, it's nice to say we all bleed red, man, but that's still not answering the question. And yes, it is also fair to say people of different genders from us and people of different ethnicities from us are different. Mm-hmm. They're different from us. And so we have to figure out what makes us different. Okay, if you recognize that there are differences between white voters and black voters, answer the fucking question and tell me how we take those differences, what those differences are, and what you're going to do to make us come out to vote for you. Mm-hmm. She did not answer that whatsoever. She immediately did that. Within like 5 seconds of her opening her mouth, she was like, all lives matter. That was all I heard.
We haven't even gotten to her record yet.
No, but that was just like so bad. Like, that was like such a softball question. Like in my mind, like that was like I was like, oh, this isn't really that hard of a question. How could she really mess this up? Like, I mean, this is like right. I feel like this is like the pitcher just going right down the middle. Like, this is, you know, you're a black woman. You should be able to identify with these people. You should be able to understand how to turn out black voters. Like, this question is for you to give a good answer, and she just flubs it.
We're gonna go to where they are.
Sit in their living room.
We're gonna listen as much as we talk, and then they will vote for me.
Yeah, and it just goes back to show you that Kamala Harris is a fucking cop, and that's why she doesn't actually know black people aside from putting them, funneling them into the prison system, and then profiting off of their free labor. Point blank, she ain't friend of people. And I mean, like,
did you like just disinvite Kamala from the barbecue?
she patrols it. What are you talking about? She's like, these Negroes are being kind of loud. They're circling the block. Like, gotta keep our eyes on them.
She's the one who shows up just to respond to the noise complaint.
Literally. Ugh, no. She doesn't have my vote. I think that it's interesting, though, because I think that she is well aware of the fact that, it is very, not profitable, but I think that there's a bit of this push behind candidates who aren't cis, white, heterosexual males. And she's like, I am basically none of those things. Like, who knows? Maybe she's gonna, like, J.K. Rowling it and be like, actually, I'm bisexual. And she's going to, like, you know what I mean? Like, who knows? Like, but for what we know is she's completely different from Hillary. She's kind of like Hillary, but with those communities that we felt like Hillary didn't care about. We didn't think that she really cared about the black community, the black female community. We were like, maybe we'll get that out of Kamala Harris, and we get that. We think that just by looking at her. And she knows that people think she's going to be a people or the person for the marginalized just by looking at her. She's fucking not.
Right. Because, like, as we mentioned earlier, it's just, like, what you see. Mm-hmm. Like, nobody really looks into their policies and their past voting history, except for people like us who are, like, really interested in it. But mm-hmm. The general public will just look at her and be like, yeah, okay.
They want the sound bites. They want the sound bites. They want her showing up on Broad City. They want her showing up on, you know, these, like, really popular, like, shows and stuff like that.
Yeah, I get the sitcom vote. Yeah, it's gonna be concerning for me watching 20+ candidates on a stage with probably over half of them like advocating the same progressive policies that Bernie has, like, his whole fucking career, you know? And that's, I mean, I don't make any effort to hide the fact that, you know, I'm going to support him if he runs again, because I'm not going to believe you. You know, if you are on stage talking about Medicare for all, tuition-free public college, raising taxes on the ultra-wealthy, if you don't have a record, like an entire career proving that that's what you believe in. Because right. You're going to have tons of candidates like Kamala like Booker on stage talking about how they support all these progressive policies, but it's like, how can I believe you when you just signed on to these things in like the last couple years?
Right.
And haven't been put to the test. Like there's never been like a moment where like, you know, a lot of these, some of these people were like in office during the time when Obama had a majority, and mm-hmm. like, you know, mm-hmm. so you get to see like how they fight when they have power, and essentially like that's more important than to see how they fight when they don't have power, because then it's just theater.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like I can do whatever because there's no consequences. Like,
mm-hmm.
there's,
I think we can see one of the differences between the Dems and the Republicans is the Republicans, they have you know, over like the last couple of years, they've had all the power. And they've tried to do things like dismantle the ACA, but they couldn't do it because they suck. The Dems,
yeah.
Like, when they had all the power with Obama, they didn't even try. They didn't even do anything.
They're like, oh, maybe we'll do public option. Nah, second thought, it's too hard. Let's not do like anything. We'll just adopt the Republicans' healthcare plan.
Which... Right. I think that's why, I think that was a big reason why, like, Trump did as well as he did, because they could, like you had said earlier, they could point to the problems that Democrats did make because they were lazy or because they just didn't care enough or because it wasn't profitable enough, and be like, look, at what has government done for you, really? Mm-hmm. And that was a big reason why Trump had won. And we know this, too, because a lot of people who were kind of not anti-government, but who were like, the government right now isn't working, after Bernie lost, there were people who had voted for Bernie who turned to Trump because mm-hmm. they saw him as... against, I guess, just kind of like against what was wrong.
They wanted someone who was going to go in and firebomb the system.
Yeah.
And that's what Trump said he would do. So that's why they went for him. And I think that's why I see a lot of Democrats saying things like, you know, I'll vote for anyone but Trump, which I get, I understand, but I think that's a dangerous mentality to have. I think that under the current conditions, in what's happening right now, we need a revolutionary candidate. We need someone, if it's not Bernie, someone almost exactly like him. Because one of the mistakes that the Democrats made in 2016 was not nominating a candidate who authentically spoke to people's material needs, who actually said, I know that the system is not working, and I'm going to go and change it. Trump did that, but he did it through fear, through bigotry. Sanders had a message that was similar, but one of like, let's all come together and lift each other up.
Let's fix this shit. And the enemy being the corporate, you know, elite and things like that, instead mm-hmm. of immigrants, yes. and people
and
of color.
And now the scapegoats right. that yeah. those corporations tell you are actually the problem.
Right. So if we just put up any old Democrat in 2020, I think it's going to create an even more dangerous situation.
It's going to be Bill Clinton and Obama all
right.
over again.
We're going to, if we get another Democrat, if we just get another neoliberal technocrat who's not going to really change anything, you are guaranteeing an even worse Republican in 2024, 2028.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Kamala will probably be a favorite among the more moderate Democrats, because I think they don't have the same views on the problems with the Democratic platform and the message. They think the Democratic platform was always good. It was good under Obama. It was good under Bill Clinton. They were always better than the Republicans, at least. So it's fine. We just need to find a charismatic spokesperson that will attract voters and win. Mm-hmm. And then we'll fix the problems once we get into office, and we'll fix yeah. it. And that just, it has been shown time and time again to be false.
Right. Those are the dum-dums. The people who like toe the party line. They don't care about anything except for the letter next to your name. You know, and that's how we got to yeah. where we are people who are so loyalists to the party, they choose the party over policy, you know, mm-hmm. and that's how that's why the Democrats have been failing over the last 30, 40 years, is because they haven't really tried. They haven't done anything. And most of the voters that vote for them, like, are just fine with that because it doesn't really matter to them or affect them. And so that's why you get like Democrats losing like over 1,000 seats since right. Obama. You know, it's because they're just coasting on being better than Republicans.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's, I think, Bernie's biggest strength, is he has a movement of people behind him that will push for his policies once he's in office. A lot of, I mean, that was, I think, one of Obama's biggest faults was he had rode in on this wave of enthusiasm and then just sort of said, okay, I'll take it from here. I'll go work with Republicans and I'll go hammer out some, you know, policies and they'll you know, be good enough. We'll fix things. It was very technocratic and was not radical in any way. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, and that would be, this, and it's the same type of mentality that, Harris would bring. You know, I'm a prosecutor, I'm really skilled, I'm really smart, I can make deals, I can, you know, negotiate these things, and I can use my personal skills to solve all these problems, and not realizing that it has to be bigger than just an individual, it has to be a movement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's, that's what sets Sanders apart from the rest, because every candidate but him is going to basically give the same message of, I'm the best, you should vote for me because I'm going to fix all the problems for you. Sanders is the only candidate who says, this is not about electing me. This is about building a movement, because that is what is going, that's what it's going to take. Capital and hegemony in America is far too powerful for any one president to get anything done.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Sanders understood, is that we need to build a political revolution in order to actually change anything or make any real difference.
Yeah, I think you can see that in the way that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has been leading in the front.
Yeah.
It's not about, like, you know, her going in there and doing this. It's about her organizing people to fight with her. And it's like, it comes from like an organizer background, somebody who's like from community and like has had to fight for those things alongside people because they don't necessarily have the power just to go in and change it.
Exactly.
You know, when you're an elite, you have that mentality that I can go in and change it. I can go in, because you've always had that in your life. You've always had the power to change things around you.
Mm-hmm.
When you don't have resources like that, you can't just change the things around you like that.
So. That's a great point. I think that, you know, having someone who has an organizing background, we need way more of those people in office. But the Democratic field is lacking in that, in terms of, I mean, it's a lot of people who have this professional, or their professional class and have an expertise, but don't really have that organizing background. Didn't, you know, grow up in a, like, maybe some of them grew up in a working class, but they rose up to a professional, that rose up to a professional level and pretty much stayed there. And have sort of lost touch, I think, with a lot of the needs of average, everyday people. And
yeah, you see a lot of politicians, they go into politics saying, I know what's best for my people, where you see AOC, she comes up and she's like, this is not what my constituents wanted, and so I'm not going to be voting for this. My constituents thought that I was going to be coming to represent them, and I'm here to represent them. And we need to see more of that.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you're absolutely right. That was what Bernie, he's like, look, I will be the face mm-hmm. of the people. Like, I am not the person for the people. Like, I'm not speaking on behalf, like, I'm speaking for you guys.
Yeah.
And we're not going to get that. I don't know who we would get that from any of the candidates, like, off the top of my head. Mm-hmm. You know, I just can't. I don't see Kamala Harris doing that. I definitely don't see Cory Booker doing that. I think he'd be really good at making us believe that we've got full control mm-hmm. of what's going on, and he'll go on Ellen and dance and shit, but like, do I really think he's going to, you know what I mean though? Like,
yeah, no, absolutely.
It's the smoke and mirrors, razzle dazzle, but
I so what do you guys think is going to be like the top finishers in this then? Like,
I think Elizabeth Warren, honestly. I don't think, you'd be surprised how many white people don't care about racist things that white people say. So I really do still think and believe that Elizabeth Warren has a real good fighting chance at being a candidate for president.
Provided they all run, I think that the top, I think that the last four in the race will be Biden, Kamala, Bernie, and Warren.
Yeah,
I think that's pretty accurate. Yeah, I'd agree with that.
And I think, honestly, that would be, well, I don't know, maybe not, but VP, lineups in that regard too.
Yeah, because, you know, I'd heard, you know, someone say a lot of the people who are running are looking to be VP. Yeah. There's a lot of people running who aren't looking to be president, they're looking to be VP, and mm-hmm. maybe Joe Biden just wants.
He went back in the White House.
He doesn't want to actually do anything.
That's the easiest fucking job in the world is vice president. Yeah. Well, I don't want Mike Pence to like order a hit on me for saying that, but like, I do, you know, when it comes to politics. That is a pretty easy, cushy job to have.
What an Uncle Joe job.
Uncle Joe job.
Yeah, there you go.
I thought we vetoed. I thought we said no.
This is the power of the people here.
Yeah. Who am I to deny?
Yeah, man, I think if Sanders doesn't run, we make Kirsten Gillibrand the face of the revolution.
Oh, God.
Oh, no. Oh, God. No. No.
Oh, man, she had such an interesting question on CNN. It was actually from Chris Cuomo. But she had said in the past that wanting to deport people and everything like that is like racist. And then we look back and like when she ran in upstate New York as a state Democrat, and she was in favor of deportation.
Yeah.
So like Andrew Cuomo was like, so you think Trump's racist for this? Do you think you were racist for this? She like sits there for like a solid like 2 seconds before she starts answering, and she's like, oh, well, I didn't really think about people then.
Well, just goes off on like really bad. She used to be a tobacco lawyer. She defended Philip Morris. Yeah, in court. Yeah.
They're not even selling tobacco anymore.
And her law firm that she was working for at the time gave her the option not to do it. And she still did it.
Whenever somebody asks her, like, why did she change her views, it's always like, I went down to Brooklyn or I went down to Queens.
Yeah.
Like, where they're just like, I went down to talk to people of color. Now I'm different.
Right. Tulsi Gabbard's thing on LGBTQ stuff was, I went to Iraq.
Oh. Yeah. Wow.
Oh, it's like those, they're like buzzwords. When we went to go see Vice, I remember I kept saying that. I kept leaning over to Ben when we saw Vice in theater, and I was like, this movie is just full of scary words. There's so many. It's like Halliburton and like Karl Rove. And it was all these like really scary words. And I feel like we are going to be getting nonstop like happy words jargon now. It's be like diversity and, you know, intersectionality. And it's like these things that like 13-year-old kids on Tumblr have been talking about for the last, like, 10 years, but now politicians are like, yeah, these might be good. Maybe we should.
It's like Chuck Schumer debating whether to retweet Cardi B. Yeah. Should I do it or shouldn't I?
Well, she was cursing. Yeah, that's the least of our fucking worries right now in like the political climate. Like, the kids are still locked up. You're worried about Cardi B cursing. Okay. Maybe Cardi B should just run for president.
Oh,
I know that Stephen Colbert said he wants her to do the State of the Union rebuttal, and I was like, fuck yes. I want to see her ass. Get her a writing team, and I think that she would do fantastic.
That would be the best rebuttal.
Yes, but I want her to be in the same, like, full body paint, naked, except for body paint, like she was in the twerk video with City Girls. Have you guys seen that? Of course you guys haven't. But of course you guys haven't seen the twerk video, but it's amazing, and I think that Chuck Schumer probably watched it.
Probably did.
No, Cardi B said that she would do it. She said, why not? I get straight to the point. Government shut down over.
She's a woman of few words. I fucking love her. Shake a little ass, get a little bag, and take it to the stove. I just feel like she's got the right idea.
Fucking American treasure.
One day we're going to look back. We're going to look back and be like, Cardi was the beacon of life.
She changed America.
Just call her Cardi Beacon right now.
Cardi Beacon, yeah. She like was the person who got all those wayward ships back home.
When she did that video about the government shutdown, like people like in the comments of the video were saying, put on the yellow vest, Cardi.
Yeah. No, what really struck me was that she got... almost, she teetered the line from saying, we need to start guillotining niggas, and then kind of scaled back, because she goes, you know, we need something to happen. Something needs to happen. We can't keep letting this happen. There needs to be, like, some sort of, like, revolution or something. And I'm like, keep talking.
Yeah. Well, keep going. Yeah, you're on the right track here.
I'm like, yes, Cardi B is, like, 2 centimeters away from calling for armed revolution. And I am. I'm going to be the first person there in, like, 6 inches still out in a yellow vest. I'm going to be so ready fighting for Comrade B. Comrade Barty. That's all I'm saying. I'm here for it.
Hell yeah.
I somehow don't see the NRA defending you in stilettos, yellow vests, and AK. I mean, I know that about gun rights, but...
Right.
certain gun rights.
Be like, no, not sure. That's not the face we like to see behind a gun. We're going to have to scale back on this.
Actually, I think that's a good place to wrap it up. But, yeah, this is fun. Thanks for being here, guys. Zach Reinhardt, Ross the Boss Fisher, Melina Brand, and Ali Gonzalez. See you guys later.
Later.
Bye.